All right, and I believe we are live, and I think we are recording. Yeah, good. Okay, good. All right, welcome. It's about 8:36 a.m. Wednesday, August 17, 2022, coming at you live from a beautiful Belgrade, Serbia. We're gonna step outside. We're gonna enjoy the morning here on this terrace. I'm right on the Danube River. Got little boats and people, swans and stuff. Pretty picturesque, rather idyllic, as they say. Good pace of life. Now, today we're going to be talking about the zombie apocalypse. Predictive programming and the things that it taught, what it means in the culture, why this is being used, in no particular order. I mean, you can't separate one of these things out from the other. Obviously can present in a coherent way, follow some narrative rules. We can follow the rules of grammar and syntax, but our paragraph's going to be all over the place because there's not a single aspect of the zombie apocalypse theme that you can really separate from all of the other working parts. That's fascinating to me. That's fascinating. So let's get comfortable. Let's get settled in here. Let's get into the zombie stuff. What the zombie means. Occasionally, I'll be looking at the comments. There's been a question I've seen a few times. Sort of, this is really just more like parliamentary order or procedure. I don't know, but someone just asking, "Hey, I'm your supporter from Serbia. Recently found your channel. What happened to New Resistance, like this other website connected to us?" And the movement, is there still a New Resistance in Brazil? They have a website too. Yes, so there's still New Resistance is a global movement. It's not my relationship to it's not important, but we have sections in, Brazil and Italy, in the US and Serbia. Canada also, and still, active. Open Revolt website is not ours. That was a that project has been terminated along with the person involved with that. I guess they also agreed on its relevance, so it's not there. But other than that, it's we don't talk much about New Resistance. You know what I mean? Sort of like a need to know kind of thing. But if you're in Serbia, we'll talk. All right, so let's move forward. Now, interesting thing with the zombie apocalypse, of course, is that people naturally are going to start thinking that there's a real zombie apocalypse being planned. And I'm going to intertwine another theme from a different movie that wasn't a zombie movie, but can help you understand some of the direction that the zombie stuff can go, just so you can understand. Okay. There was a movie that Arnold Schwarzenegger did called Running Man, where he's basically like a anti-corporate freedom fighter. So this movie was made like in the 80s, right? So this would have appealed to like leftists, like of the old type, and libertarians. Isn't that interesting? So he's like an anti-corporate, anti-government freedom fighter. Well, no, he was in the military. He's not a freedom fighter. He was in the military and they had an attack helicopter that was over a food riot, which are what real riots that happen, like, are basically food riots. I'm not talking about controlled burns or, you know, police leaving rooftop Koreans to do police work or anything like that. I'm talking about uncontrollable situations, not scams designed as part of investment, like destroying property, fire sale investment, like whatever the mayor of, what was it? Anyway, you know the stories. And that's very different from the zombie apocalypse, obviously. But in Running Man, there were no zombies, okay? But there was a food riot in progress, okay? And the military police or the army or whatever, and Schwarzenegger's in there in this copter, they get orders to attack, to just shoot, to kill the, I guess they're like protesters, rioters, whatever you want to call it. They need food. And so they get the order just to machine gun him. And he says, I'm not going to do that. That's crazy. Like, that's murder. And he gets into actually a fight with guys on the gunboat. And there ends up being like, you know, shooting on the gunboat and crash and everything. Okay. Now, now we have it in real life. And you can see it's a real technology, right? A deep fake. And they showed the public a deep fake that he was the one that wanted to open fire, and that the guys and the orders were, this is a peaceful, you know, provide protection for these people. And he's like, let's kill them all. You know, they totally changed everything. Okay. Now imagine that once again. Okay. And now a military unit has been deployed to put down some type of situation like this, and what they tell the guys in the gunboat is that all these people are infected with a new strain of some mystery illness, right? Like a new strain that's making people, like, you know, PCP levels of strength and shit, like, you know, you need body stopping bullets because they're like, it's like when people are on shitloads of meth or something and come at you with a knife. I've never been in that situation personally, as specific as that sounds, but you get the idea. And if you created this narrative that in the culture that this kind of thing is possible, like, you kind of think it's possible. Don't you think people in the military think it's possible? So then what happens when they get an order? Like, obviously some people are not going to be down, but enough people are, right? We have the whole just following orders phenomenon. So that's going to be a thing too, isn't it? So you're going to have people just following orders, and they're going to be told, I'm just saying in this scenario, that the people down below look like human beings, but don't treat them like human beings. Like, don't get too close. They're actually dead, or they're infected, or whatever it is. They're going to get you. They're going to infect you, and then we have to kill you too. That's a very practical approach. What we're talking about right now is a very, very practical approach. More broadly, the theme of, like, zombies reflects, obviously, and this is like nothing new, alienation in society. You can look at maybe going back to maybe even like the in the recent American experience, like the Doors, right? People are strange when you're a stranger. This kind of sense of alienation, social disapproval, or things like this. Okay. Then you've got, so this is like another trend, right? You've got this thing, this idea, growing idea that there's a population problem, you know, kill them all, let God sort them out. The so-called mass shooting events, people supposedly, you know, flip out and start and have a bunch of guns magically, maybe magically carry, you know, 400 pounds of that by themselves to like a nest and start like opening fire on, I don't know, everybody in Las Vegas or whatever, things like this. And those things all tie into this idea, because for a person who's a totally antisocial, they see the zombies as everyone else in society. And one of the things, like, why I very much discourage referring to people in their own, you know, different stages of their own process in life as being sheep or zombies, is that you're actually setting up a misanthropic kind of like paradigm, or you're like responding to the system. The system is saying, hey, look, there's two classes of people. There's we, the elites, who are going to like live off world, whatever, like in a space station. And then the overly mind destructed earth below is going to be where people live. Like, just, they have all these dreams. Bezos said something about like most of humanity is going to live up in this is weird, right? Most of humanity, you know, millions and millions of people, I'm going, oh, that's not most of humanity. Millions and millions of people, most of humanity are going to live like in these space stations above the earth, and then occasionally some people will go down to the earth. Okay, so maybe they're going to do a reversal. Or maybe, you know, you have like, what was that movie? Was it like Oblivion or something, Tom Cruise? And there was like that thing called the Tet. And they thought that they were being told that the human beings were like in the Tet, and that others were going to like another world, like, they don't know, like the Titan moon or something like that to live on, because the earth was destroyed. And, you know, it turns out that they were the ones destroying it. There was no humans in this in this thing in orbit. This big structure was just completely a machine. There was no humans in it. All of these things are reflections of different, like a weird mix of things in the culture, because they reflect a weird intersection of both elite and popular culture. And it's very important that these themes are dissected, because when they intertwine, you're going to end up with people who can relate to the elite perspective of things. Oh yeah, they're all just zombies or sheep. And that, you know, they're like useless eaters if they're sheep, in this kind of way that they frame it. Or zombies. And zombies are definitely not human beings, and you definitely have to kill all the zombies. So in a context of a culture that's bent on, you know, depopulation and this idea of overpopulation. Now, you know, they are promoting, the elites are promoting this idea of super cities, smart cities, and actually increasing the human density of cities by a very uncomfortable level in order to achieve, at best, this is like from a lot of letters I received from different professors in urban planning who've been brainwashed by this cult, because that's what happens in these departments, that these cities are going to get like, wow, 15, they're going to be 15% more efficient. So if we just do all these crazy things that cost trillions of dollars and spend, you know, decades and decades of energy in one month, you know, but long term, when we all have little miniature windows and, you know, 5 foot high ceilings and sleeping sacks that we crawl into, like in a Japanese business hotel or something, and that's going to be your life. Working, like, if you're lucky, from like shared rented office space, like those weird, you know, techie kind of things. And it's like, am I inside of a Starbucks, or am I supposed to work here? What's going on? this is like one direction for things, and that's rather optimistic. I mean, an optimistic way that you can envision living in their plan. It's not very optimistic at all, is it? Just, at best, it's like that, let's say. And yet, the zombie phenomenon looms overhead. And why do we have this continued fixation on it? Why do we look at the zombie as, you know, how is this so important to us? What does it really speak to? And I think those are the pertinent questions, because when you really look at it in this way, you can see that there are no mistakes, and they're not just taking the temperature of society. They've kind of created this whole thing. You've no doubt met people who are like, you know, oh God, there's just so many people. I wish they could all disappear. You know, when you're put into these city urban settings, this is the contradiction, by the way, too, because they're the ones promoting that cities should become more dense. It's kind of strange that they're talking about these issues of supply lines and efficiency, and rather than change the rate at which items are used, like planned obsolescence, they're talking about more big schemes about population relocation, like, you know, driving more people into cities. If they can make the necessities for life be regulated, centralized, controlled, more like in a geographic grid, like a smaller area, like a city. A couple of years ago, the CDC decided to have some fun and use the, this is the official story, use the question of zombie disaster preparedness to get people thinking about prepping in general. You know, the CDC went and backtracked on that, and they had to explain, you know, what they were doing. And it was kind of strange that the CDC was doing something that all of a sudden that seemed to kind of fit in with the things that preppers were talking about. And then for the theme, the subject of preparedness to be around a zombie apocalypse, certainly generated, this is like the most, you know, let's say a naive approach I'm taking, okay? That this was, you know, successful in getting people to focus on preparedness. But the zombie is at the same time humanity, and yet you want to eliminate all of them. That's the key component in understanding the deep psychology involved in any social engineering aspect of the zombie phenomenon. It's to get you thinking about, think about how wearing the face mask and staying 2 meters away from people, right? Think about how that fits in with becoming increasingly afraid of trying to create fear of open places, or fear of public places, fear of other people. It's talked about how things like sociopathologies can be acquired, or you can have certain cultures that are more conducive to promoting them. So you can have, you know, there's some idea that some people are born with whatever, some kind of tendency towards psychopathic disorder, psychopathic behaviors. And in for some reason, in studying sociopathologies, these can be acquired. I mean, I guess the word socio society makes sense. It would make sense that, of course, you have some kind of level of human you know, I was distracted there. What were we saying? Yes, yeah, so you can have with people that there's some kind of, you know, some tendency, some innate tendency to be in this direction, but compounded by you know, environment, like let's say, you know, a certain type of corporate culture, and you're trying to promote in the environment, and it's like, well, you know, it's all about slitting throats here. So, you know, these can be culturally acquired. Think about how important culture is. Think about cultures in collapse. Think about cultures of snitches, right? Like in dictatorships, right? It's a snitchocracy or something like that, right? So you have a lot of different ways that society can create antisocial personality disorders. And in the past, some of these might have been understood in a small way, and others would have been discouraged. I mean, as they're understood, it would be like, oh, these are bad things, okay? It's when you get this sort of scientific revolution in the humanities and the development of sociology that you start getting quote unquote smart ideas. You know, how do you channel sociopathologies in the interest of good or something like that, right? Well, certainly not all bad results from those things. Like if sociopaths are competing with each other, you know, maybe there's something good that can come of that, right? Especially if they're in an all-out fight to the death. There's a lot of opportunities for everyone else that arise, you know, as they decrease, as they attrit at each other's own power, as they attack each other. And of course, in the background, we've confronted this idea of apocalypse with the COVID thing and the lockdowns. And then at the same time, the political unrest, you can look at the summer of 2020, things like this, the political unrest in the US, the fires, the riots. Then you have this, is there going to be a confrontation with China? Is there going to be a confrontation with Russia? Who's behind the mystery illness? Was this, you know, leaked from a lab? All of these things are like 100,000% zombie apocalypse canon. It's like this is 100% the plot of like a zombie movie, right? World War Z or things like this. And then, you had the Russian operation with the Z. And you're like, oh, yeah, this is World War Z. And then all this focus on the biological weapons, the stuff with the experiments on human beings, the stuff they were testing on Ukrainian soldiers, the stuff they found in the blood work of Ukrainian POWs, stuff with their immune systems. They received like high amounts of all kinds of weird shots. And yet you've got these hepatitis and all these weird strains, far beyond natural. Also, they can identify when strains are like the ones from labs versus the ones that kind of evolve or mutate is more correct. Talking about like, you know, natural selection in the wild that produces different strains than when you get a lab. And so the Russians are saying, yeah, this stuff is definitely from lab. Stuff that Ukrainians are infected with is definitely from lab. Do they have some kind of material or vested interest, the Russians, in like lying about that or making it up? Yes, they do. So you have to take all of that with some pretty big fat grains of salt. And, you know, none of us, I mean, I'm not an expert in looking at that data coming in, but they're presenting it as bulletproof as possible because this is stuff that they're presenting to the UN to be deconstructed, like full scrutiny from all of their adversaries. So, you know, they're pretty confident that the stuff that they're putting out, and I think that this is being, there's been a lot of stuff released and it's trickling out, and there's some other report due in September, and things leading up to November. When you look at some of the stuff coming from like the World Economic Forum, they've got, you know, they've recruited a very sad man, Harari, and you know, they get him, he's like, for his age, just by the way, And maybe this is in part, like, maybe where he's from, like, maybe they're kind of like not very hip over there. I don't know, like, if they're not up to shit over there, but this whole, like, dystopic kind of, he's really not that different from, like, the whole, like, dark enlightenment thing and the, like, Moldabug and all these, you know, like, those kind of edgy dandruff lords of the internet from, like, 15 years ago. That completely, we're talking about, I don't know if it's like Nick Land or any of these people or Moldabug. These people completely don't understand how corporatist liberal democracy functions. They're caught up in some Nietzschean thing about, I don't know, like, it will, you could almost call it like authenticity or something like that. But it's they're caught up in this Nietzschean. Obviously, authenticity is not a Nietzschean concept, but it's very similar to this. And it's actually about it's a French word that Nietzsche uses for resentment. It's like ressentiment or something like this. It's a particular color or flavor of resentment. And they completely misunderstood that. So what you understand the misanthropic agenda of Harari, this is really, I thank the World Economic Forum actually for putting out Harari like this, because it shows there's nothing cool or like particularly edgy about the things that this guy is saying. So he's a perfect spokesman for it. Totally deflates, by the way, anything that seemed like it could be subversive. So just so you understand, and we'll tie this back into our zombie apocalypse, okay? Because this is actually an elite discourse. Zombies, the fear of zombies is actually the fear that all very wealthy and powerful people have of like filthy people in public places. You understand? Like, you know, things like even the, you know, anti-smoking campaigns is about, because, you know, people who maybe don't smoke, right? And a lot of cigarettes, like in smoking and stuff, has a bad effect on health. And so you had enough at this time, you had enough people who are like from who have power who are like, I don't want to smell these fucking peasants smoking everywhere. It's bad enough. Okay, let's cover them in this, you know, cancer causing deodorants. Let's lather them with these like whatever things. And now they got to stop smoking. Look at, for example, how like germophobia is a mental illness that highly, it's far more prevalent among wealthy people, right? So there's this correlation in the mind between the masses and multitudes of regular people and this idea that they're all basically germs, useless eaters or like zombies. So there's a reason for elite in this culture formation process, this hyper focus on the zombie. And if they can get us to relate to that, okay, we're going to relate to it through a different lens, like we talked about. We're going to kind of approach it through a combination of the elite's disgust for humanity and then the frustrations that we encounter with dealing with people who've been, you know, let's say brainwashed by the elites. Okay, so the elites are looking at all people as part of a population problem, and we're the zombies. But to you, the zombies are everyone else. But, you know, you're not, when you think about zombies and hordes and stuff, you don't think, oh my God, here comes Bill Gates, here comes Madeleine Albright, here comes Bill Clinton zombies. No, you're thinking about like all the random people like at Walmart being zombies. And that's a very important aspect of understanding like the whole thing with zombies, okay? All right. Let me take a look here at your yes, in Brazil, New Resistance was characterized as white supremacist. That would be surprising to them, you know. I mean, it's They're not. You know, you'd have some really confused people if they're a white supremacist. Just take a look at them. You know what I'm saying? But let's take 30 seconds. We're gonna come back in about 30 seconds and look. We're gonna dig deeper into the zombie thing. We got a lot more to get into. We've just kind of introduced the subject, and we're gonna actually get into some receipts. All right, we'll be back in just a few minutes. Hey, what's up? We're back talking about zombies and culture, elite plans, and kind of how these things tie in. The movie World War Z, like the Brad Pitt movie, a whole lot more had been planned for that. Okay. And I guess it was a book or something like that. And the movie that they shot actually was only about half the movie. And then they were thinking, okay, we'll make a sequel. And then that got canned. And what was actually going on with the story is that the story then moves to Russia. And it becomes about the fight back against this World War Z. And Russia becomes one of like the important locations of resistance against this apocalypse. And there's this whole thing about, you know, fighting zombies in tunnels. And there's a whole aspect about the issue of tunnels and people living in tunnels and then fighting zombies. And because at this time in the culture, you know, Russia, contagious new strains of a mystery illness, and, you know, tunnels and people hiding and maybe trafficking, things like this, are all very big themes happening at this time in the real world. And magically, World War Z, despite being a huge success, it wasn't a bomb. Brad Pitt draws audiences as well. He's pretty solid in these types of films because he's always Brad Pitt. And that's our American style of acting, just so people understand. That's why they're not actually doing roles. It's just the person. So in what they did, so there had been discussions, okay, at the studio. And they were also looking at what was happening with the show that had been on, American Movie Classic, AMC, or was it Turner Movie? Whatever, it was the Walking Dead show. Okay, and this series has a big following, and a lot of it gets into these related themes. Now, the CDC actually features into this. And the CDC in the storyline of The Walking Dead, in the deep storyline that I think, you know, you have to kind of go from season one and then, you know, look at maybe season nine or something like that. It's very clear that the CDC is involved in different aspects of this. And they actually had invented it and then a strain got away or something like this. The focus, when you look at prepping, there's a big crisis in the prepping movement, okay? Because the preppers are not actually prepared to deal with the small group dynamics and small group group psychology that actually is the primary determination if human groups survive. Okay. So in other words, you have a lot of individuals and you have a lot of, let's say, libertarian ideology. And this is very practical, like personal belief system in a society of scale, right? Where you actually have people have different, there are different ways that the costs that individuals or, you know, economic entities or whatever there's different ways that the costs that any, you know, actor might have to bear, right, that can be externalized, right? So a libertarian ideology as a personal belief system while you're living in a reality corporate statist society is functional, because you can basically, your safest bet in response to almost every interaction that you're going to have with government or corporations or, you know, whatever, even police or landlords or tenants or whatever, is this shit is mine and that shit is yours. You don't touch my shit and I won't touch your shit. And that's very, and I think that's kind of the stuff that's sort of like, you know, everything I needed to learn, I learned in kindergarten. And that's all fair and good. But the thing is that when you have a post, we have a breakdown of civilization, and you're actually talking about human groups, small human groups, okay? The sharing and the communal ownership of the things is the overriding characteristic of that. So if you've been good at hoarding now, and then you think that you're going to use that to leverage what, like a personal dedicated bodyguard, like entourage, and then you're going to, like, what, like, how does that work, homie? It doesn't. So because if the people will just seize it from you, okay? And so you just prevent that by not being the owner of it to be seized. You make it everyone's collective property. Now everyone has an equal interest in the negative consequences that you have, like, in larger scale scenarios don't arise. That's why primitive human groups existed more communally, you know, and that kind of scares some people, because you've got that, what's that thing called? The root of the word, like, communal, is like communism, right? Because then you're like in a, you're like in a little society, and you have that funny root word, like society, like socialism, right? So that turns people running the other way. That's fine when you live in a society of scale, especially when a lot of those encroachments on your existence seem to have sometimes a socialist flavor, sometimes a capitalist flavor, sometimes a corporatist flavor. So you've maybe grown accustomed to identifying a lot of nasty tastes in your mouth, you know, that are very distinct, okay? But prepping groups, the strength is focusing on a belief system rather than the charisma or personalities of the leaders involved. We talked about in warlord situations and the developing what's called gangs and beliefs among gangs. Gangs in the sense of the study. So the word gang, we talk about gang warfare. We can talk about like 18th Street Bloods, Crips, whatever, Young Lords, all this. You can go back, but gangs, some are political, some are violent, whatever. The word's actually from India, gang. So is the word thug, thuggy. And these are words, okay, from India. And the British, when they kind of go in and they're looking at sizing up the Indian subcontinent and how are we going to rule this shit, okay, they did a lot of studies on things like gangs and small group interactions, small group cohesion, and things like that, okay? And then ultimately, you can keep things at a very low level size-wise in terms of intensity, keep things kind of low intensity, so they're manageable by very small groups. They're all very maybe territorially limited, and then limited by the limited modes of transportation that kind of would be delimited by any, you know, expansive tendency for that group. Because they're just bicycles, motor scooters, things like the gangs, right? Think about like gangs in a city, or gangs in a countryside, okay? And then that leads, and that's part of the, gangs are the basis for political projects and building political movements. Gangs are the basis for, you know, handing out party cards and getting everybody to join your party. Or like the movie Gangs of New York. Remember, they were like a gang and they were working for the Democrat Party. And they were like, when people are getting off the migrant boat, right? they were like signing them right up to join the party as if like that was a requirement for citizenship. Well, Democrats still do the same thing actually today, but in the gangs of New York, they show that whole process. So it's very interesting. In the study of gangs, then you tend to have a charisma around a leader, okay? But when for that franchise to succeed and to grow, you actually need a set of core beliefs, and that those beliefs are separate from whatever the leader says, okay? In other words, if the leader has to justify their leadership on the foundation of fidelity to that mission or to those ideas, to that purpose, okay, which allows you to say, oh, you're not fulfilling that. So if it's just the personality of the person, the most thing that you can ever tell them is you've changed. Well, he's not the same anymore. He's different now. We have to overthrow him, okay? And that's different from saying, oh, you know what? Your policies are not in line with pursuit of these things that we agree on. And for warlord group, for gangs to develop into more successful warlord groups, for warlord groups to connect into larger human groups, and we're talking about post-apocalyptic survival, okay? And the specter of the zombie, okay, is not actually the zombie in the sense of this thing, literal, okay? The zombie is the context, is this creeping awareness, situational awareness that all around you, the world is chaos at all times. Okay, so when we talk about the difference between baby boomers, right, and then Generation X and millennials, right, Generation X and millennials share far more in common, despite that some millennials a decade ago, when they were too young to know the difference, thought that Gen X were boomers and they came up with OK Boomer, but baby boomers are actually people in their 70s, right? So that's a different reality. A lot of the kind of like millennial discourse is actually very Generation X, because Generation X created the culture that millennials live in, right? So the thing about, but they're much more alike than not. And one of the things that they share different from boomers is that boomers have a high amount of trust in institutions. We're generalizing, of course. We have to. I know that there are anti-systemic people of all ages, right? Because there's many old works that are, you know, very anti-systemic and go back hundreds of years. So that we're not just saying, oh, all of a sudden, magically, these new generations are rebellious. No. We're just talking about tendencies in generations and stuff. And as a tendency, baby boomers have trust in institutions. Well, think about it. They were the most subsidized, right, financed and subsidized generation, not only in American history, because when we look at American history, this is in terms of the accumulation of capital, wealth, and things like that, land, control of world resources. The American empire was the world's largest empire, right, in all of history at one time. And, you know, its collapse period around 2000, 2005, 2010, you can see all the consequences of that today. But at a certain point in time, it was the unchallenged, you know, global hegemon, right? And all that. Now think about, now you have the most subsidized and financed and privileged generation in all of American history. And in American history, it's the most powerful, wealthy, whatever empire in world history. Does that make sense? Okay, so that's to understand the disconnect that baby boomers experience in understanding the world versus we who see the world as basically at war. We have like a spidey sense that just beyond the horizon are the rumbling of tanks and explosions and chaos, just beyond the horizon. And, you know, people born after like around 1980 or something, or after 1970, 1980, in particular, talking about millennials, okay, this is a whole, so millennials already turned 40, by the way. If you want to feel old, but you know, this whole thing, generations are still useful because we talk about, you know, generation theory, we talk about the fourth turning and things like that. We haven't actually talked about fourth turning much on this show, but I've written about this in relation to the fourth industrial revolution and other fourths, many fourths actually happening, fourth political theory. We're living in some time of fourth right now, 4-4-4. But I would say that when you look at how the zombie phenomenon then is being used as an educational tool as well, okay, don't look at all culture through a single lens. So you can see there's many truths to be found, because we can make a lot of references to film and culture, because there's a lot of things going on in film and culture that conspiracy theorists get wrong, or they misunderstand, or they don't actually know how the thinking works. They don't know how the spells work. They don't know how history is written. I don't like the term predictive programming because it's a misused term, very much like social engineering. Had nothing to do with like white hat and black hat tricks in social media or in influencing people. That's not social engineering in the sense of sociology, what the word means. And likewise, with these other terms are being misused. Predictive programming is being misused to mean what you understand it to mean, but the word actually, the term actually means something else. Okay. Predictive programming more relates to programming in the present designed to contemplate things which come into the future. So it's, predictive programming is in a sense more related to contingency planning. It's not that you're watching predictions, you're being programmed by watching predictions on a screen or something like that, or you're being programmed to accept them. You're not simply being programmed to accept them. Okay, you're being programmed to identify them when they arise. And if whether you accept that or not is, you know, a different question. Okay, now in the show The Walking Dead, okay, there's an agenda in here, okay? And I'm going to propose something to you, that there are beliefs among some of the elites, okay, that don't subscribe to the monarchical view of bloodlines, or they have the view that it's almost like the race theory, but it's like some other thing, okay? Or they view that there's enough of this good stuff, the good blood or whatever, in the population, and there's kind of a eugenics program in effect, not the eugenics that you think of in terms of reducing the human population. That's actually called population control, and the word eugenics again is misused. So there are different approaches to eugenics, but they don't necessarily result that the overall population is lower, just that the quality of human traits that are passed on through reproduction are increased. So like the allele frequency for, you know, traits that are more conducive to whatever, things that are, that the whoever shaping the program wants in the population is eugenic. So you can breed people. Typically, when you look at eugenics and what the word means, actually is towards the good. Okay, just to understand, in the Greek, but it can, you can obviously use it to make a population weaker too, if that's what you thought was necessary to control them. But that's just a dumb, it's just, these questions are not new. These are questions that are contemplated by Xenophon, right? You know, dumbing down your population to control them doesn't make your society stronger. And attempts to do that could potentially only function, you know, if the entire population was in this globally in the same program, in a single kind of government system. But if other societies look at what you're doing and then identify the big problems in that, and they can say, okay, they're trying to do population decline. What are the weaknesses in that? And then what are the strengths in, you know, population increasing? Okay. Well, maybe there's actually strengths in population increasing. They have some theory about population control, but that's actually based in a lot of tangled up networks and a lot of tangled up feedback loops and a lot of entanglements in terms of the vested interests are at odds with the development of new technologies. So it consequently, they're going to look at population control as an answer. Why? Because in the development of corporate practice and corporate law and in business practices, et cetera, okay, all the costs, because of the general weakness of, let's say, organized labor in the U.S. to actually represent working people, they're very strong in raising money, giving to Democrats towards anti-labor, anti-worker policies and outsourcing jobs and globalization and NAFTA and all of that. Okay. But so they're good at that. Unions are good at that, but they're actually bad at representing workers. Okay. And because unions in the U.S. are so bad at representing the actual workers who pay the dues, okay, labor had put up no real fight against corporate encroachment on everyday life. Consequently, look, Max Keiser would totally agree with me. Okay, he's a multimillionaire investor, totally, he's not a market fundamentalist, but he understands markets and games them out, okay, and talks about it. And I haven't listened to him in many years just because of my schedule. But 10 years ago, I was watching, I probably watched, you know, the first 50 episodes, you know, without stop, without missing a beat. And I would say that to understand how they have set up the culture in this sort of culture war, you would internalize this fear of large uncontrolled groups of people, right? Which is a typically conservative fear in terms of conservative politics in modernity actually historically arising from the better to do classes than not. Okay, the more well to do tended to be conservative, okay, up until recently. And they're still conservative. The ruling class is still conservative about the things that are ultimately power, which is power, right? They're going to conserve all of that. Everything else is just stuffy. So the ruling class is still conservative in the sense that they're trying to hold on to power. They're conserving power, but all the social engineering mechanisms that they use might have shades that look very liberal or look very this or look very that. Now their desire for more power, right, and the way they want to express it is very liberal. So they're very liberal also in a sense of, in other words, they feel very free to just grab more and more. They're all a bunch of grabblers, really. They just feel very free to keep grabbling and grabbling. So that's a very liberal thing. But they're very conservative when it comes to sharing. So you have liberalism and conservatism in the ruling class, no doubt. But in setting up, in understanding in many different writers and many different people in Hollywood, okay, despite that maybe they have an interest in the occult, because it's Hollywood. Like, I'm from Los Angeles, and a lot of my friends were doing things in different parts of Hollywood as well. Because of the subculture I was involved in, a lot of vintage and antique things and knowing like set design, especially for historical films and things like that. I know a lot about you know, certain old products like bakelite and certain evolution of die-cast metals and certain materials used in production, like around World War II and afterwards and stuff. And also like in clothing, we can identify, like if we're doing a period piece, like if things are wrong with how people wore things in different like mid-century modern representations. And I had a lot of friends that were doing, you know, making the cars, restoring the cars for like old movies and stuff. So when you look at the street, they're like lined with all old cars, things like that. So we had subculture cult of Los Angeles things, the Knickerbocker Hotel, the ghost of Rodolfo Valentino. We had the Black Dahlia murder mystery. We had all these things kind of going on, you know, Los Angeles film noir kind of stuff. So that was the scene. It was definitely like a, you know, LA Confidential kind of thing. So a lot of writers and people in Hollywood, okay, they actually agree with you and they understand a lot of the problem. They probably would be more open-minded than some of you about some gender or sex issues, but they would also fully understand how that's being weaponized to divide and conquer the population, and they would be against that too. Does that make sense? So people are not all dumb or one thing or the other. So there's a lot of people who are like writers and stuff in Hollywood who are kind of like subversive, and they're just kind of generally subversive. So even though there might be kind of things that look like attacks on maybe traditional things and status quo stuff, they also kind of have a sense that there's also a status quo of the real power, and they're also kind of attacking that. I can like give you some examples of funny things that writers do. For example, like in Game of Thrones, okay, even though you saw like this big push for like people for representation and inclusivity and stuff like that, there's stuff that they did that you wouldn't know, that they were giving a lot of dog whistles to, like, let's say people on the super far right. So like when Jon Snow, like in one of the speeches he gave, okay, like to rile the people, I don't know, cause I, you know, whatever it's like, but in one of the speeches he gave, it was a big one. He began with the, you know, storm clouds are gathering over the land. I'm like, oh, I know the storm clouds speech. And then he brought in elements of the speech from what's his face, you know, Goebbels, and the total war speech, and I mean a lot of different speeches that have been given and documented. You would know, and there, a lot of the references were like kind of Nazi fascist. Okay, so also for example, when you look at, they did like a reboot of The Dark Crystal. It wasn't that successful because there were problems in the actual literal writing part in terms of like arc and transformation and character development. But the background, actually, the thing itself is very important because The Dark Crystal is an accurate representation of how power actually works and what are the motivations of power. And it also presents a pretty compelling Genesis story about the division of cells, the division of souls, and the division of people into other people and things like that. So in other words, you're going to actually find many things that are kind of similar to theosophic ideas, ideas in, you know, 19th and 20th century occult and things like that. Okay. And all of that stuff, there are liberatory components to that. I mean, you understand that they're presenting the ruling class as like these decrepit old kind of reptilian brain, because they're reptile driven creatures that literally suck the souls. Like they eat the souls. Like they figured out that they can live forever through sucking the souls of like these most innocent little creatures on this world. Like these, you know, the little, you know, like baby people, basically. They're adorable. Right. So they're not capable of bad thoughts, right? They're completely sinless, actually, and their souls are being feasted upon. Okay, they like put them in a machine and they extract the life essence from them, kind of like Reich's Wilhelm Reich orgone energy or something like that, the life force, like their chi or whatever. So this is all very actually accurate representation of how the ruling class actually does absorb. And it's not the ruling class financializes it. They have their mechanisms are like that. But I know it's going to sound weird, okay? But the dark overlords that they work for actually feed off of the energy. Yeah. So we've talked about before how you've got like those life forms at the cracks at the deep sea, at the bottom of the ocean, the deepest points, and whatever heat vents are coming up. They don't eat anything except for they live off the energy that comes up off the vents. Like that's their, instead of any sunlight, they get that, right? So you can see that energy can come from different sources and, you know, as a concept. Your thoughts are actually coming out of your mind in whole form. Okay. Even though there's some loss, in the energy and that's how it's converting to heat. Like there's heat coming off your head, not just from the, you know, the blood, but from the brain itself, you have heat coming off your head. Okay. It's an electrical storm, but the heat is just is actually the inefficiency. That's actually like what's coming off of it. The actual thoughts that you have, right, in the form that, in other words, as a something that you would understand as a thought, okay, are literally coming out of your head. And they come out of your nose, ears, eyes, and mouth, of course, like much easier. But, you know, like when they, when people, and they were doing this 20 years ago or 30 years ago, right? 40 years ago, you know, like when people been in a car accident and they can't like, and they've had a spinal injury, but now they've got like, they can connect certain things like the probes. They can put things on top of the brain. They can like shave your head and then just put like the little things on your little sticky things, right, with the wires on your shaved head, and then goes to a computer, and then you can start to like move the robot arm or the robot leg with your head. Okay. They don't have to do a surgery to do that. They just put the things on your head. Okay. Because that's how the brain works. Okay. Because this is the same, you know, spectrum of light, right? Of electromagnetism. And electromagnetism is how you have, you know, televisions and cell phones and radios. We didn't invent electromagnetism. Electromagnetism carrying information, the information quality of electromagnetism, right, is a pre-existent, natural, you know, created aspect of the universe. So the information potential, okay, of electricity to carry information is a quality of light. So light is information bearing. Light is doesn't scatter information that otherwise mirrors would be impossible. So the kind of the supernatural created, one of the evidences of the supernaturality of this existence and the created essence of this existence is the fact that mirrors work. Mirrors are extremely supernatural. Mirrors, the fact that mirrors, and by that we mean natural, but natural that the explanations given for the functioning of light and carrying information, okay? So this is a reality that is trying to be suppressed at all times, okay? But it comes out in many forms, right? So trying to assess and understand the elite motivations, okay, is many of them have focused to the exclusion of development of many other faculties, including creativity, okay? Many of them have focused purely on the question of organizing themselves into the top of a hierarchical structure for power. That has been the sole focus. That is typically a person's sole focus who is in that position. Okay, there's a great cost for that. One of the great costs for that are all the other faculties and things that were not developed. Okay, consequently, new ideas, right, and even current ideas about things and how things can be done, should be done, will be done, are coming from us, actually. They're actually coming from the mass culture, okay? Then you have a managerial class that has to kind of, and by the way, Mao explained this whole process. It's the mass line, Okay. In other words, the party goes out into the masses and understands what the masses think, where their real attitudes are, and also looks at their creativity, the things that they've done in the process of production that are like little, whatever, life hacks and things like that. And then take all that back and then formulate, this is the party program. Okay. They're actually, many of them, not capable of coming up with something, not because other people are, but you actually have to pull, you actually have to immerse yourself in the people to know where the people are thinking. Okay. That's why we've explained there's such an important focus on the World Economic Forum, their index and all their supporting documents for things. You'll see that half of them are anti-systemic literature. They're actually critical literature, critical of globalization, critical of the power of corporations and governments, critical of even the transatlantic posture vis-a-vis Russia. Okay, and these are references that think tanks and World Economic Forum are using. And so then they show, hey, we're familiar. We know what people are thinking and doing. Okay, we're not coming up with these things in an absence of understanding where human minds are at. The amount of data about what people think out there is immense. Okay. The fundamental critical flaw in this plan or setup, if you will, is that the people at the very top are actually incapable of judging the, you know, utility and correctness or, you know, realistic potential of many of these different things, because their expertise is getting into power. And by the way, getting into power and staying in power are also two different things, and maybe a hyper focus on the tools required to get into power are not the same things as the tools required to stay into power. This is probably even more the case with the upper level of the managerial class, because they get into political office, into power, and they use all those methods to get into power. And then the system is designed so that they're not accountable, so that they don't actually have to know how to stay into power, because staying in power, believe it or not, will invariably, unless you have some new technology that zips everyone's mouths or something, okay, staying in power invariably involves making concessions to people. So parliamentary democratic processes, in a way, kind of through rotating people out, you never actually have like that one guy that you can just be like, nope, it's your fuck up. You're going to stay here until you fix it, actually, or we're going to kill you. You know what I mean? Like, or the whole thing comes down. So in many ways, you can have even examples where dictatorships are more responsive to the public than so-called constitutional republics or so-called democracies, when they use that aspect of rotating power, which is meant from keeping from power becoming crystallized, you know, the idea of limited terms or whatever, or rotating government, to actually have no outcome. And that's very good at a certain stage in history, when cartels and corporations and banks had less power than they do now. Maybe back then you want government to not be able to do very much. Maybe, you know, gridlock or whatever and partisan divisions are good, because then you don't get new laws, right? You want basically to slow down the rate at laws get passed. So if they're fighting, good, right? You want to always slow down the rate that laws get passed, unless you're in some inflection point, then it matters whose laws. But generally speaking, you want to limit new laws. But what if the laws that exist are allowing these corporate monopolist things to get bigger and bigger? Well, we're talking about zombies here. So for our practical lives, the real zombies are these zombie corporations, because they operate on a set of directives. They're like basically zombies. And that reality of it is the reason that you have the World Economic Forum to try to come in to be the brain, because left to their own devices, a lot of these companies kind of end up at each other's throats, or kind of end up in competition in ways that the globalists think that this competition is inefficient. Okay, now why is that? Well, because the efficiency is experienced by the consumer, right, which gives us more spending power. So obviously they like monopoly. They like that. For them, efficiency is less efficient. because it's more efficient to their aims, which is staying in power, not into delivering commodities at competitive prices. You see the difference? So you're looking at two different realities here. The spectacle of the zombie, okay, we've been thinking about the zombies as being the sheep, and we've almost taken up the kind of the same idea as Kissinger. You were walking around without your mask on at Costco, and people were walking around with their masks on, and you were like, man, look at all these zombies. Okay, you were, weren't you? Yeah, you were. So then that's actually kind of part of what the elites wanted you to have. There's kind of this aspect, okay, and this is just something that you need to explore. There's kind of this aspect of some part of the elite that view that agree with the useless eater hypothesis and agree that population needs to decline, okay? But they are pushing to set up. This is a different group, by the way. We're talking about we're not talking about white hats or anything like that. We're just talking about different groups of people in power structures, okay? That don't want the population decline to be across the board. They actually are looking at how to have information out there that for people to discern. And sometimes things are just accidents. Sometimes things are just nature's way of working things out or the balance of things. And it's really not that simple, but I would go heuristic on that and put it that way. And these are just the things to consider. Okay. This is just like a thought experiment, right? You're talking about an actual eugenics program, right? Like where people like you who didn't get the jab, so you are going to live to be, you know, 80, 90, 100 years old, right? While other people are living to be, if they got the jab when they were 20, they'll probably live to be like 40, right? If they got the jab when they were 30, maybe they'll live to be, you know, 45 or something like that, okay? Or whatever. I mean, I'm just saying in this hypothetical scenario, like, what do I know, right? I have no idea, but let's just say for shits and giggles. You have all this information on the internet, okay? And maybe, right, some of these people are just using the fact that government doing things has a lot of bad, and you know that the government doing something in this corporate controlled environment and with the way that people obsess with power and controlling people are also gravitated towards government, whatever you want to call it, like people like Ardern in New Zealand, like complete detached psychopaths who have to like watch videos on how to have facial expressions and at what part of the sentence you're supposed to use an expression to, you know, emote a human sympathy. It's like a fucking Data from Star Trek or something. And just look at the stuff that comes out. You know, when you look at The Walking Dead as a show, right, they're not teaching you tactics and how to successfully kill zombies. I mean, okay, whatever, a little bit, but not really. In fact, a lot of their zombie killing techniques are kind of dumb. They would have invented kind of more like tractors and a lot more things that you'd see a lot more often. Okay. What it's actually about is small group social dynamics, okay, i.e. the drama, okay? And that's actually the small group and us and versus them, this idea, you know, who are the good guys? They're only the protagonists in the sense that these are the people that you happen to be following, in the same sense that you're only the protagonist in your own life, in the sense that you're you, you know, and maybe you're doing things in your own interest, And so then you're the protagonist in your life, but that's not like a story. That's not like a protagonist in the moral sense, right? Everyone pursuing their own ends isn't always good. Those aren't always good ends. The fact that people ought to be able to pursue their own ends is what's good, but the ends that people invariably pursue, the freedom to pursue those is what's good. The things that people pursue that choose to pursue them aren't invariably good though, right? Sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not good. And sometimes those come at odds with each other. And they're not both good coming at odds with each other. Typically, there's one or the other that you want to see succeed in the interest of good. So I think that when we examine the issue of zombies in culture, on the one hand, we have to be careful not to take the bait and see things through the lens of like, remember when the lockdowns first happened and photographers were taking pictures of streets of major cities without people in them, and the way that legacy media treated the pictures, they talked about how beautiful they were. And many people would agree with that. Seeing the streets without people in them, maybe just to appreciate the architecture, right? But they would be agreeing. Most people might not agree with each other on why it's beautiful. But many people, unfortunately, would agree that, oh yeah, we're overpopulated and all these people not, you know, in the picture. But there's many different types of zombies in our life. We discourage calling people zombies and sheep precisely because of how that figures into some elite plan. Sadly, and it is sad, we tend to fall into that thinking all too often, especially when confronted with an argument about, you know, why we think what we think. And someone who disagrees and starts reciting the, government-approved, corporate-approved talking points, you're going to look at them, you know, like they're a sad, it might anger you or sadden you, whatever your reaction is going to be is, you know, connected to your own attachments. But that response that you have, whether it's empathy or disgust, it's been alienating. And it can be tempting to see through the lens of the same elites, this idea that we have too many people. Now, I'm of the belief that early childhood interactions and reinforcements have a lot to do with outcomes. But just like there are differences in other things between people, I'm sure that there are differences in, you know, intelligence. Like, I'm horrible in language. I can't speak any languages. I barely speak English, as you can see. You know, just my head, the connective tissue between my hemispheres is very low bandwidth for the amount of data that needs to get through to express what I'm trying to say about a subject at any given time, probably because it can't all be said at one time. The zombie apocalypse, the specter of it presents a new problem for us because many people found it to be a good outcome. Many people look at the zombie apocalypse as a good thing. They look at the potential for freedoms. So that many things are expressed in this. In the French Revolution, it was a two-pronged revolution. You had one group of people trying to overthrow the monarchy because they were the bankers and they just wanted to set up a direct banking dictatorship so that the monarchy couldn't get in the way, and just to seize the assets that the monarchy wouldn't sell off in its debt to these, to this Rothschild bank, actually. And so the Rothschilds, this is not a conspiracy theory, this is not anti-Semitism, okay, this is just a fact, okay, like there were people, they had a name, all right, it happened to be the Rothschild family. Karl Marx wrote about this extensively, okay, for you lefties who are worried about naming the names of the ruling class. I know that's against your leftist rules. I know that you want everything is sociology and theory, but you can't name them. Sometimes we name them. They live places, they have addresses. You can look them up, say hi, you know. They did a double pincher move on the monarchy, on the French monarchy. And they had different reasons for trying to undo things, okay? In other words, the peasantry and all these people involved in the revolution and the city dwellers, they had all different reasons. But the collective, shared aspect of this, which was in the mass formation, which was that destroying, that a total destruction and leveling of everything that had been built up to that point, okay, was a better option than trying to maintain a system which struggled in a conflicting way to maintain the interests of all the old vested interests that had in varying ways been involved in building up the old society. And now, because of the introduction of the new technologies at the beginning of the first industrial revolution, the social classes that at once had observed sparingly amenable status quo now arrive at a new crisis brought about by the application of new technologies and changes to the productive forces in society, the so-called means of production. Now, that means that the very lower classes were activated into a process of social change, but also towards things in their own interest, and they got things out of it too. They got improvements out of it too. A lot of improvements in legal reform and justice system and property rights and equal representation and things like that. You had these problems arising between the different estates. And so this is a case study that applies to many different historical examples. Okay. Today, okay. There are different elite agendas, and the World Economic Forum tends to represent one-ish of these agendas, maybe two, but basically one. And it has been a lot of work to build consensus around this, and it is what you would call the globalist agenda. And they're open about that fact that this is not, you know, a conjecture or using conspiracy language. I mean, they are the ones who have openly said, you know, globalization, right? That's what globalists fight for. Globalization is the future. They were saying this in the 90s, and at precisely the same moment in time when these things were supposed to be the reality, it actually, you saw that it's not. Is it? So in other words, in the 90s, 2000, remember like with the anti-globalization protests, Seattle, all this, this was actually an anarchist and left thing to be against globalization. Typical conservatives didn't actually have the acumen at this time. They were focused on more culture questions in the country, and the crisis of employment was manageable. But you back then, you could still look at, well, is this guy drinking too much, or maybe he needs to go get a new certification, do something else. Back then, you could say those things, so you could pass it back to like individual choice and, you know, shortcomings and bad decisions. So conservative arguments about things like that made sense up until a couple decades ago. But with actual unemployment, like around 15%, it's hard to expect that everyone has a job, I think. But anyway, you start to look at these people on welfare or people on unemployment as useless eaters. And if we were all in a helicopter gunboat, okay, and we were circling over a group of zombies on the ground, you know, don't get too close because we might, you know, you might hit some electrical wires or something. So we got to stay high up. But I promise you, friends, those are zombies. So just open fire. You know, what would you do? You probably open fire. And the people that you're shooting at might not be zombies. This is the situation that we're actually encountering. So these are the things to keep in mind. We've actually talked about a lot of different things today, all related to this subject of zombies. There are more things that we wanted to say. The ruling class, as the individuals, okay, are composed of some combination of meritocratically arisen psychopaths, and you would call them the modern nobility. The banking dynasties. What has kept the system alive until now has been the ability of this banking dynasty to pull in and incorporate competent managers and technocrats from the masses and then kind of incorporate them into the technical and management end of things. But they're no doubt in their own right, these people become, you know, in their own right, power brokers, and they can get into the fights with each other and stuff like that. So, you know, Obama and Clinton and people like this, like, we're not born into these families. Some people might put there's a theory of a bloodline, and maybe it's there. And of course, like, you know, we're all related to probably, you know, King George or something, or, you know, or we're all related to Genghis Khan or something, right? But realistically, they have attempted to do that. Now, I make reference in this way, okay? We are not the zombies. They are the zombies. So people have many different drives. We have basic instincts, probably four of them, right? At the level of the amygdala, the four Fs. But then we have all this other humanity wrapped around that reptilian brain. Yeah? And the human experience is so diverse and beautiful. A zombie is only focused on brains or whatever. Remember, like the old George Romero, brains, right? George Romero zombies, only brains, right? Just eat brains. That's it. It's the only purpose, only function, period. Okay. For these people in power, they're power zombies. That's, you know, they're just, that's human flesh for them is, well, human flesh, but also the power. They are single-minded, focused on the power. Those are the zombies. So these zombies understand at a certain level that they're incapable of coming up with ideas. This was represented in the dark Platonic Gnostic film, Dark City. It shows humanity living on a little miniature flat earth in space. It's just one city. It's not clear if these are people that were abducted from Earth or where they come from. It's not told, but it's just an island, a flat little Earth floating in space that is controlled by these intergalactic aliens race. And they're observing the humans. It's sort of like they're the demiurge or something, like a collective demiurge. And they're like studying the humans and trying to extract the essence of what makes each human a human from the humans, because they themselves as a race have reached a crisis point. Okay. Their greatest strength was having a single consciousness. Like their race or whatever achieved, right, this achievement or something, or they evolved this way, or that's how, whatever they are, of having a single consciousness. And while this has allowed them to expand and become whatever franchise that they've become, where they have the power to construct artificial planets in space and breed humans there, okay, the humans think that they're living on Earth, on a globe, in a city that just has signs. There's something going on with the bridges out, so you can't leave. But then every night when people go to sleep, the visitors, the watchers, they switch people's memories around so that when they wake up, that consciousness now has a new identity. They are now this new person who's always been there, but now they are that person in that city. And they have no memory of having been anyone else. This is a completely strange thing to these visitors, that each human being has its own consciousness. And they understand that the solution is something to do with a new, with changing their consciousness, okay? But from within their paradigm, they haven't encountered the fact that the problem is that they're a single consciousness. So what they're looking for in distilling all these differences from people is to then create a single new consciousness that they will all adapt. Like they will all, you know, do like a basically like a brain transplant or a consciousness, you know, whatever, mind meld or something with a single, with this other thing that they create. Okay. They're trying to create a consciousness to kind of change or reproduce or something, because they're done. They're moribund. They're done with their, you know, creative potential is no more. Maybe they never had it. Maybe that's what they do. Maybe they've always gone around from, you know, world to world and done this thing. And maybe that aspect of their existence is sort of like how we have to eat plants and animals to live. They have to, you know, consume ideas, right? So the people in charge of things in our little world, they may have a very similar shortcoming to this alien race of visitors in the movie Dark City. I would definitely check that one out to have insights into, you know, one very plausible one very plausible thing about what's happening. I don't think that people understand the power of structures and situations to create an almost like an artificial intelligence or like a pseudo consciousness. That like organizations and these structures imprint upon the minds of the people who work in them, who function in them. Those people still think that they're individuals, and they are. So there's something about human beings that even when they're in these institutions and in these structures, right, there's varying degrees to which the humanity survives, but typically some aspect of the humanity survives. And when we find moments of that humanity, we're both surprised and relieved, and it gives us hope. So we should see this as like, we have expectations already that people are zombies. You see what we've done? We've already expected that people are going to represent, that when you interact with people, that they're always going to represent their zombie identity to you, their institutional identity to you, right? So really, it's the elites who are zombies. They're incapable of, they realize that they've hit the roof, the ceiling of the third industrial revolution. Now they're fighting each other. Their plans for global domination have failed. Every huge major sign that their whole ship is sinking, they're now engaged in a psychological operation called the World Economic Forum to make people in their own population, and even to confuse, you know, maybe leaders of other countries kind of on the fence, that all of this damage and destruction has been part of some plan. Yeah, I mean, you build contingency plans for how to manage a sinking ship, but that doesn't mean that blowing the fucking hole in your ship was part of your plan. It's just all the plans that you do once the hole is there, you see? Their ship is sinking, and they've got intelligent conspiracy theorists thinking that they like did this as part of some brilliant master plan. Brilliant master plan to like, I mean, they're trying to make it part of a master plan, if you can believe it. If everyone believes that it's actually happening that way, actually, that is what will happen that way. Very similarly to, if you view human beings as useless eaters, you're going to treat them that way. If you view the people as the zombies, then you're going to start thinking, oh, maybe the virus was a good thing. Maybe all the people who took the vaccine should die. Oh, maybe that is the elite plan, and maybe it's good that I'm going to live, and maybe the elites are really my friend, and maybe they kind of want to just sort out all the idiots, and then we're all going to go party at Oprah's house. No, that's probably not going to happen. No. So when you think about the archetype of the zombie, what you're actually talking about is a person incapable of being authentic, because they must represent the imperative of the organization, and that organization's consciousness is something else. The organizations of human beings building these structures actually is bringing something into the world in a more focused way, or something already present in the world and creating a focus. That's why architecture and structures are so important. That's why physical buildings or churches or physical objective institutions like religious organizations are actually important. Because everything that you build is actually consecrating power and bringing things in from these creative energies of existence. And architecture is symbolic and representative. And whenever you do something architecturally, you're dabbling into the occult, whether you realize it or not, because of the nature of this existence. Any creative thing that you do is based in this single creative force which created all of existence. Inherently good. Inherently good. That's what you want to get close to. But are you going through life thinking that everyone else is a zombie? Is that similar to Christians or Muslims or Buddhists who go around thinking that everyone else is not saved or is an infidel or is unenlightened? This concept of the zombie is actually the concept of the other. And until recently, the concept of the other was a social construct relating to other people, but you still had your people. But the tendency we talked about, the doors, and like people are strange when you're a stranger, streets are uneven, right? When you're down. This exploration into alienation within the context of the zombie narrative takes this to another level. It's a further reflection of the individual atomization required as part of the globalization process. Because you had to atomize people to break down in a radical, fast, and revolutionary way all of these prior existing networks and social organizations, which actually act as, you know, inhibitors to these changes. So they have to break them up. And the way to break up these social organizations, because these are human beings, I mean, these societal bonds are not, we're not talking about physical wires, we're talking about agreements that human beings have with each other. Like, these things all exist in our mind, right? Like, a contract is just a piece of paper. You have to have people who believe that in institutions, and then a judge, right? And okay, go take your guns and knock down this guy's door because this piece of paper was not followed. Like, we make it real, right? They don't exist outside of our thoughts and actions. So there's many lessons to be learned from the zombie narrative in terms of survival. Talk about like zombie stories from survival. Okay, but it's not survival like in this Rousseauian individual way. That's you still coming out from, you're still in that individualized tunnel as the recipient of atomization propaganda aimed at you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the past 30, 40 years during this globalization cultural push. Yes, it atomizes you as consumers. It atomizes, it breaks down decision-making, financial decision-making within families, individual credit, things like this led towards irresponsible spending, household spending and things like that. Irresponsible from a purely fiscal perspective. I'm not saying that salaries and wages would have made that possible. I mean, you would have had to be almost like an Amish. You would have had to be very strong people, and the children would have had some consequence of that in terms of not fitting in with your community if you insisted on fixing everything that broke and only fixing things and never replacing them. And that would have been your only hedge against consumerism, besides not having toys, is fixing everything that broke. Well, that's how a lot of people were who lived through the Great Depression in the US. That's how my family did it. This idea, I mean, you know, no one is a pack rat, fortunately, but you keep things that you might use again. And often you do, if you're smart about it, you don't have too much crap. But yeah, it's like reality, you know. But the zombie apocalypse has not survived, as you've seen, accurately from knowing the MacGyver stuff. It's actually all the same things we talked about a few years ago when we were giving the reasons that a logical U.S. military would support Trump, especially in the context of a social collapse or something like a crisis situation, which who knows who was involved in averting that. But again, many times cooler heads have prevailed, and we wouldn't know it because political discourse and our narratives are not designed to appreciate those things because we're problem solvers. We talked about this before. I'm going to look at some of these comments and questions that just might help. Willie says, the zombie theme being a tool in the anti-humanity toolbox is certainly an interesting concept, one that I never plotted on the radar up till you mentioned it. However, I did kind of have an instant correlation between zombies and clowns. Not that I ever had a personal interest in either. I do seem to associate them both with the U.S. obsession of some kind. Finally, a question of sorts. Could the overtly enhanced obsession with clowns be another aspect used in the game against humanity? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the idea of clowns and killer clowns, right? This is like a clown. This is like a mask. And this is not a killing that has any motive, right? This is just a psychopath clown. So this is the motif, right? A lot of correlations in that as well. You know, as a child, I never liked the insane killer thing like the Jason or the things that don't make sense. Like, I like if there's a reason, you know, behind. I was a little too old by the time that the Joker stuff came out. I've actually never watched them, but from what I understood, like the Joaquin Phoenix and the Keith Ledge, was that his name? They both did very good Jokers that kind of explored like the background and the reasons that, you know, that he's this way. But with the killer clown, it's actually destroys the concept that he has a reason. Like, there should be no story, right? Because a story gives reason, and reason, anytime you introduce reason into something, you're eliminating some aspect of horror, aren't you? Because the a lot of the horror is in the unknown and in the insanity of it. That's what the lack of sanity, okay? So, but the killer clown phenomenon, actually, I would say that even though it's very much related to the zombie phenomenon, that it's more that it has the same lineage. It's kind of, they have the same immediate ancestor, so they're cousins and stuff like that, but their most recent same ancestor is like that 1960s social alienation, right? I mean, just think about where the zombie comes from in American culture. This is like the 60s and 70s, right? George Romero. I mean, you kind of have this context of maybe some people took acid and freaked out or something like that. You have a lot of things going on at this time. And the killer clown stuff, I mean, there was some real killer clowns as well, wasn't there, right? So this stuff comes up, and it all comes out of this time. I would say that the American phenomenon, actually the serial killer, you know, more broadly, and then is related to this as well. The killer clown as a insane psychopath archetype is related to the zombie in its mindlessness. The horror is in its, you can't negotiate with it. You can't say, oh, I know what happened to your mom. Don't kill me. It wasn't your fault. I love you. You see what I'm saying? Like there's no angle at all there. It's just a killer clown. So don't get close to the gutter or you'll get pulled in. And I think that that's very close to the zombie thing on those markers. Of course, very different in many ways too, but they definitely come out of, just as you said. So it's a very, very good question and comment. Thank you. Please, if you can, comment on why the CDC at its establishment would release what they later called a zombie apocalypse action plan and later withdrew it, as they called it, a joke. Yeah, like I said, at the top of the hour, let's come back and talk about that in about 30 seconds. Yeah, so we're back. Thanks. The CDC, I mean, if you look at the manual that they released, the drawings of the zombies in the zombie survival manual were like cartoony, and it, you know, it's plausible. They have plausible deniability, like it was always meant as a joke, and it's fairly plausible, their deniability, but I mean, not to me plausible. I mean, just as a marketing thing, it was, yeah, I think people received it. I think people received their claim as authentic. I don't know, you know, but there's something to it for sure, because there's all these dog whistles and things like that. And all these things are signs that are meant, and they're read by different, I mean, just think about all the number of reports that were generated by foreign intelligence agencies in response to that, you know, just studying and looking at what's behind that crazy CDC manual, the Zombie Apocalypse Action Plan. And if foreign intelligence agencies, I mean, I can tell you, no doubt, it's like, what is this? What's going on? In today's world, I mean, because the active research with biological weapons are supposed to attack certain people in certain ways. I mean, they're doing studies into like injectable therapies that create specific antibodies that attack certain cognitive functions associated with certain activities of, or what they, you know, their theories of, you know, maybe where religious thinking comes from, or spirituality, or maybe creative thinking, or whatever. I mean, they're looking at, and that's just from the people in that one avenue. I mean, you can always invent a new investment scheme or a new promising new thing. So who knows from what direction that will finally come out of, but the hype around, you know, vaccines, you know, gene therapy really, and the idea of using, you know, sort of very directed antibody responses on very specific, you know, types of cells or groups of or groups of tissue or whatever is a thing. And the literature is everywhere on that. Everywhere on that. You know, you know, in the process, so we talk about all these other kind of predictive programming and social and survival aspect of it. We'll come back to some survival stuff after this, but we'll say first that when you're looking at, you know, the process of killing a zombie, there are many satisfying things about this that parallel YouTube videos of like excavating big blackheads and popping zits or like removing tumors and things like that. So there's something about this, like this gross sickness and the satisfaction expulging or whatever, all of this like kind of green and toxic goop crap, like away from you, like, you know, blowing a zombie's head off is like popping a giant zit. So there's this aspect of like this wanting to kind of clear and cleanse and sanitize this whole area around you, as if human beings, right, were germs. This can really, really tap into antisocial thinking. And you can see, the comment before, like, you know, looking at killer clowns, which we actually connected to serial killers also, you know, imagine, right, a serial killer who just thought that everybody was a zombie, like in his mind, whatever, he was crazy, just thought everyone was a zombie, goes on a killing spree. So that's going to be happening, I'm sure. Like, that's going to be the next thing, right? Why not? I mean, it makes sense. If you want to come up with more reasons why people who didn't shoot people can't have guns, you know, I always say, hey, look at people who shoot people. Look at people who got guns illegally. I'm joking, of course, when I say look at people who got guns illegally, if you want to know why people who legally own guns shouldn't legally own them. But yeah, so there's a weird public education involved, you know. We talked about Dark Crystal. We talked about a little bit of Game of Thrones. We talked about Dark City. We introduced talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger's role in The Running Man, how he was ordered to open fire on people below who were, it was a mostly, you know, 95% peaceful protest, but that doesn't mean that you machine gun everybody, right? So he wouldn't do it. But if they were zombies, he would have done it, right? I became concerned that the non-vaccinated people thing that the elites were going to push harder, or maybe they just didn't succeed, okay, at continuing that stigmatization, really creating the other. I mean, it's very strong, but look at where it's at today. Now, before you think that they've simply changed tack or whatever, yes. But that's because the tack they were on wasn't working. And it wasn't working because of your pushback. Now, there are little, you know, helpers, I'm sure, here and there. And who knows if there are people even closer to power who are contaminating the ideas, cloaked in appeals and flattery to the beliefs of the elites, which they hold to be true, which are false. And by appealing to that, insert agendas that ultimately lead to its to their own undoing, but knowingly, knowing that they're that, hey, we want more poison. Okay, here, eat it up. That's what you want. So there's many things to consider about this type of programming. On the subject of, we were talking about group dynamics and survival. You want to study, of course, like the Chinese Civil War and the warlord period. You want to look at the British occupation and management and their studies, their sociology on India, where we get the word thugs and gangs from. In our construction of the zombie. So everybody is a zombie in somebody else's opinion. See, many people think that you are followers and that you're following all these different people that have ideas that you listen to, and you don't. You just listen to some of the things that they say, and that some things are interesting and seem true, other things seem less true or are less interesting. And you listen to, you know, dozens or more different people, and you have your own opinions anyway, and you put things together how you like. The plot twist is that many people experience things that way, even people who you perceive as zombies. So instead of perceiving them as zombies, start to kind of investigate them. Look at, you know, try to understand if they're important to you. So, for example, in the Walking Dead series, there's like a plot line or plot lines that come and go about these people whose job it is to kind of like spy on other survivors to find out if they're the type of people that they want to invite to like come and join their larger group. Because you're looking for people, because these different cultures develop very differently among survivor groups. Some are like more collaborative, cooperative. Some are more like kill them all. They have different survival methods. All of this was like, I don't know if when you were like in grade school or junior high or something, if you did some kind of different groups break up to, you have limited supplies type of thing, like surviving a plane crash or, you know, you're going to the moon or something, and divide the class up into like whatever, seven groups of four or whatever, and go like that. So, you know, these are things that are part of our education as well, like when we're kids. So it's going to be a big mistake to think, you know, when you're looking at survival, post-apocalyptic survival, if you're thinking overly in terms of your own personal equipment and like weapons and provisions, and then, or even your own food source, instead of developing the like sniffing other people out skills and human skills and leadership and organizing and community building skills. Those are going to actually be, you know, given enough number of people, you know, like everyone should learn to be able to hunt and shoot and tie knots and things like this, and, you know, which plants do not eat and how to dig for water. Like, those are good things to know to do, of course. But the strength of human groups is in numbers, and at any given time today, like in any large enough group of humans, you're going to have people who are veterans and people who are already soldiers and people who can shoot, you know, better than you can. Just saying, okay, there's going to be enough things. This idea that you have to become MacGyver, those are the guys that are going to get picked off, because these are going to be the ones that are going to have to resort to like scavenging and kind of living in the perimeter and stuff. While generally the tendency of human groups is going to be to recreate larger human groups, because those are the ones that succeed against other human groups that become larger. Henceforth, we have the world today. This is the state of anarchy. You are in the survival. This is the outcome of prior survival, what you have today. And just think about how today, I'm not a good example of this, because I do try to live like on the periphery, like as a lone wolf, and come in and do and survive, hunt and then exit. But I think that it's sort of, you know, you have to have a lot of different skills to do that, that it's not an investment that a lot of people would make on the front end, or it takes, you know, a number of decades to be able to live that way, you know, on your own successfully. But it's not a model like what I'm doing, like what most of us do is not a model for future survival, because most of what we're doing are based upon the intricacies and complexities of today's society, with its vast and complex division of labor. But the error on the other end in survival would be to think that you need to, you yourself, learn all of the skills to survive, as if there's not going to be other human beings doing things better than you, and that you're not going to be able to have things that you do better, you see? So it's still going to be important to basically know how to do a fewer number of things very well. It's just going to be the things that are relevant to survival, okay? But if you don't think that, like, computer programming, all these things are going to continue to be, like, post-apocalyptic skill sets. It's not like the electricity stopped. I mean, you know, whatever. It's like the poles shift. Electricity stopped working. There was a cartoon in the 80s, probably designed just to sell toys. Like, a lot of those were from a... some of those outfits. It was called Visionaries, and it was about how one day something happened, like just one day, it was like everyday life, one day electricity just stopped functioning. Like the way that the physics of electricity functioned just one day stopped. And then all of the kind of the powers that are kind of like the weak powers or the soft powers or the psychic powers or whatever, the mentalist shit or whatever becomes like the main powers. Like those become amplified. So electricity stops, but like mind powers grow or something. It's very strange. And it's about these, it's kind of also about survival, because society collapses when electricity stops. But they seem to be formed like into armies and stuff like that too. I'm telling you, man, like there's, see, also like the G.I. Joe cartoon was all about like reptiles and reptilians and, you know, bloodlines and making like the perfect Obama or making the perfect Trudeau. Like they were trying to put together like the genes of like, you know, Genghis Khan and Hitler and Napoleon and roll them all up into one guy to be like the super Cobra commander or whatever, some shit. These were all themes, all these esoteric themes. What about He-Man, Master of the Universe, all the fucking Nietzsche and all the shit in there, all the magic and all this stuff. So like, see, through the lens of Christian fundamentalism, we would just see all of this as Satanism and the occult. Because from the perspective of Christian fundamentalism, which itself is the product of a whole process of the Protestant Reformation and the demystification of Christianity in Northern Europe at the time, where you got like the Amish today and stuff like that, and it had like Calvinists and But up until that time in Christianity, you had like people like John Dee running around, and you know Queen Elizabeth's consultant and international spy and mysticist, and doing kind of weird stuff, kind of like almost similar to Homeboy would do a couple hundred years later with the Mormonism, like finding the alphabet and all this stuff, like a scryer. All this stuff was going on. And, you know, the thing is that you have, you know, in the Bible, sorcery is real. It doesn't say it's not real. It just says, don't do it. the thing about the way that society is structured today and the way that technologies work, we end up doing a lot of incantations and spell casting inadvertently, just from the way that language has been constructed and designed over time, so that more people run around saying things, spells. Most of them are self-limiting beliefs. A lot of I can't, you know, or I'll never as expressions. Like introducing the expression like I'll never, you know, is a very interesting one. There's a lot of ones that are out there, but in someone's eye, because of that whole process, you're also a zombie. And even though through the lens of Christian fundamentalism, everything in the occult are like, you know, zombies to Satan or something like this. But within this story of the occult, okay, look, God works in mysterious ways. If you aren't still recovering from some cycle of abuse, or if you're fairly along the way, you'll readily identify evil by being able to look at the fruit that it bears. You'll be able to judge the tree by the fruit that it bears, not by the words that it uses, not by the other trees in the same forest all around it, not even if they have the same bark and the same branches. It's not the same tree. Look at the tree, look at the fruit that that tree bears. So when you look at some of these writers, I'll give you another example. There was a weird television show called Evil. And the writers had write on different things. And the writers, I think, are a married couple. They're I think, in their 70s, maybe 60s. And they really do a lot of their homework, because the entire series and all the episodes, all of the stories, even though they kind of try to make an overall narrative arc about Satan using adoption agencies and fertility clinics to promote, to grow the spawn of Satan, which is in fact a proven Jeffrey Epstein plot, by the way. That's that among the things that Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein discussed was how to get, I think, how to get Jeffrey Epstein's DNA into vaccines. And so, because Jeffrey Epstein had the same fixation, Jeffrey Epstein has thousands of illegitimate children in the world. He was very similar to that guy in Brazil. What was his name? Like John of God or whatever, Oprah's best friend. Turned out he had like enslaved thousands of women, had like tens of thousands of children or something like that. Remember that? With that cult, that satanic cult or whatever it was. Okay. So you have to find, if you're a Christian, you have to find the Christological dimension. You have to put on your, you know, first four centuries of Christianity thinking cap and actually understand the themes. Because all of those were themes in the first, all of these things to understand exist in the first three centuries of Christianity. So even though you're probably some type of Nicene Christian, and our religion formed a certain way, okay, to understand elements of the inter-elite conflict, okay, to the extent that any of these workers in that, okay, who are involved in that occult, I'm talking about from writers like in Hollywood scripts all the way up and through the different dimensions. I'm not talking so much about the political or the culture war stuff, although the culture war and the Hollywood stuff is very much connected, okay? What you'll find is a lot of Christological themes mixed up with woke stuff. Christological, like Christian, but if I say Christian, that means like Nicene Christianity. So, but then again, you know, I would consider Mormons to be Christians, and they say that we are not Nicene Christians. So if I met someone who was like a Martianite, like into Marcion, what was it? Sinope? I'd say, I guess they're a Christian, right? But I think they reject everything except for Paul. They only follow the gospel according to Paul. And they have their own version of Paul's that's kind of like very similar to like, say, Q Source or trying to figure out, you know, what are the common elements in, you know, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke and things like that. So using that thinking cap, you have that sort of the debates in Christianity in the first centuries to look at some of the stuff happening in the inter-elite conflict among the elites, okay? Because most all of them have rejected Christianity in terms of the thinking of, let's say, that Christian churches represent these corrupt and repressive institutions against human will. And of course, you know, the devil likes to always co-opt that to make it be about, yes, and that means that you're God and all this stuff, right? But that doesn't mean that churches can't be very corrupt institutions. And you can see why many good and well-intentioned people throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? That baby being Christianity. But that iti part, you know, how broadly do you construct Christianity? So we're trying to understand zombies, by the way. So among creative thinkers and among the different types of, let's say, elements that are necessary within the technocracy and the managerial element, and also in the area of creating the narrative and the story, we've actually arrived at something very interesting, okay, that we might be looking at some penetration of good, of a force of good into this material coming out, okay, whether in, you know, TV series or probably more series than Hollywood, because it seems Hollywood is only doing like fucking Transformers and Marvel shit for 20 years. So I don't know what Hollywood is, but maybe more like the series, the narrative stuff, right? Where people kind of invest in the characters and the outcomes and maybe follow it from year to year. Those are probably more important now than film, in the sense of, you know, a 2-hour instantly dated looking CGI festival. Let me look here at these questions here. Yeah, just give me a second here. Yeah, it was John of God. Yeah, John of God. That was Oprah's. Yes, and the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee, and the voice of the bridge of the bridegroom, sorry, I have no light here. The bridegroom and all the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee, for thy merchants were in, oh yes, thy merchants were in the great men of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. Yeah, sorcery and deception. But the thing is that sorcerers can be deceived by deception, and these sorcerers can be deceiving each other. So, you have many, many strange influences working upon people, and you just can't always understand, what's going on, or how would a Christian fundamentalist like get behind Trump, for example, right? Grab him by the pussy, Trump, right? So, I mean, just think about that, or just many things that he represents. I mean, just think about things like I don't know, greed, gluttony, sloth. I don't know, maybe not sloth. He's actually very anti-sloth, high energy, very meticulous. But look at the whatever seven deadly sins, and look at how many of them could apply to Trump. Like kind of a lot of them, right? Wouldn't they? So, but yet you can see this, and you might make some analogy to First Testament stuff. Nebuchadnezzar or something. Anyway, you have this, and it's so difficult to articulate at times, because there's just so much there. And the minute you begin to try to describe it, you realize, how much you'll never be able to encapsulate. You'll never be able to fully describe, but we can try. So there are a lot of, you would say, Christological in the sense of, the many individual people have just gone off on their own and developed their own thinking on things. And many of these people end up being writers. And it doesn't mean that the final product is all theirs or what doesn't go through revisions, but very good writers sometimes make sure that their writing is what is written, is what goes down. And on the we were talking about the TV series Evil, and all of the representations of the process of all of the different stories of each episode, because it was done somewhat episodically, are all things that people have really experienced and are real stories basically. And or just and it's not the stories that are real, but and they are, but it's the sort of like the rules of how it works. And I was it's very surprising to see this level of knowledge about how things work put into these, right? And you have to look at what are the real consequences of that information going out into the public. You see, while most of Satanism has been in the occult, not all of the occult is satanic, overtly. Now, that doesn't mean, but the same truths would apply to anyone. I mean, anyone, just because you've been baptized and you call yourself a Christian, or let's say you're a Muslim, same thing in the sense of you think you're right with God, that doesn't prevent you from doing all sorts of fucked up things that aren't right with God. There's no like, this is not like a get out of jail free pass, right? That's not how I have it read. I don't think I just get to I go on a killing spree and be like, oh, I'm a Christian, sorry, Jesus, oh, forgive me, I give my life to you. Okay, no, sorry, So there's limits to this, obviously. There's limits to this. And even in the story of Paul, we would say, oh, wow, look at how Stephen Protomartyr was, you know, probably surprised to see, Saul, the killer of hundreds of Christians. I mean, he was there, you know, rooting on the killing of Stephen, wasn't he? When he was hunting Christians, skinning them alive. So that's all very weird stuff, isn't it? Now, in this thinking, okay, in this, what you're seeing in some of these scripts and in these show narratives, all right, are actually a lot of insightful things that have a lot of empowering potential. Okay, and it's passing through the censors because the censors are so dumb. This is how you know subversive stuff is going on, okay? Like, imagine if you had Christian messages cloaked as New Age because the occultists at the top think that everything New Age has satanic potential, which it does, but anything Christian has satanic potential as well. It's what you're doing. It's what you do that lends it that character. So now you've got these idiots who just want to see that everyone's like a bearded lady. And so long as you've got, you know, so long as you take, like, you can take, you know, whatever, like the Dark Crystal, and start putting, I don't know, whatever those little fuckers, elves or whatever the fuck they were, like transgendered ones and, you know, whatever. Okay, and then that's going to throw them off. They're going to be like, oh, okay, so this is propaganda about that. And it is, it serves that purpose, but you can filter that. I mean, you can do it, which means it can be done, and that message is in there. Now, are there other routes? Yeah, I mean, you could. There are faster ways, there are other ways, but we're just talking about messages that are getting out there for the consumption, for mass consumption, and what's really going on with it, right? Because there are, we're not just saying subversive to the old traditional order of things, we're saying subversive even to the some of the plots and aspirations of those in charge by explaining exactly what's going on here, like what's at stake. Like, this is a spiritual war, and the elites or the, whoever they work for, like, actually are like sucking the life out of you. It actually is something, you know, metaphysical-ish that's going on here, maybe even quite metaphysical in the layman's sense of the word, not Aristotle's metaphysics. One moment, we'll be right back. So think about, in like prepping and survival, like the Rictatorship. Remember the period in The Walking Dead when it was Dictator Rick, and you realize that this group is suffering and going through all these stupid outcomes because of like Rick's control of things. And then when he, and then the murder of Shane and the way that he allowed his wife to manipulate the outcome of, you know, when she wrote him off for dead and then she got with Shane and then turns out Rick's still alive. And so then instead of just dealing with it, she wanted ultimately Rick to kill Shane and got, and that's what happened. Right. So that's very, this is kind of like guerrilla stuff, like guerrillas in the mist. Yeah. You know, this is very like, you know, hominid behavior stuff. So if you've got everyone running around with a, this is my property, those are my rations, this is my ammo, and it's going to be like, okay, we'll be back then, homie. You see how that's going to work out? See what's what? So it's actually the technology in survival is an ideology, like a big ideology. But the bigger and more complex, the better, because the more complex the ideology, then you're going to have a priestly caste. You can even have divisions. That means you can even have divisions within your whole. You can support factions because you've got a priestly caste and you're kind of all on the same page about the big questions. Well, that's kind of like the basis for political parties. If you can unite all those different tribes and stuff, then that's your winning solution in terms of that's one winning solution in terms of post-apocalyptic survival. And those things are being disseminated to the public. The things to be aware of. See, the thing is that from a very interesting perspective, a lot of people, a lot of survivalists and preppers actually don't like The Walking Dead because of the all of the, breaking the rules of survival and all of the lack of focus on how much food they would actually be focused on all the time and a lot of other things and a lack of attention. Like they want to see more MacGyver stuff. They want to either see more farmer stuff or more MacGyver stuff in The Walking Dead. Okay. But that's actually the kind of stuff that everyone can learn, but that kind of just makes you a worker. You see, like people might be developing these skills thinking that they're going to exist as like lone wolf or something, but that's not how human groups aggregate, and they don't aggregate around personalities at that level. At that level, now they have to aggregate around larger ideas, okay? And then once you get into the battle of ideas, right, you see people who are smart and good at some things can understand that the detailed knowledge of the complexity of their subject is what leads to their superiority and their knowledge and, success in that field. But they've just thought that political theory and political ideology and stuff like that was either simple or we just have to say the basics, or that's the simpler, the better, the simpler, the truer, whatever the fuck you think, is not how it works. It actually is the more complex and the more grandiose and the more detailed and the more whatever has to actually fit all these criteria to create like a religion or an ideology. Okay. So in China, out of like, post-apocalyptic China, the two main ideological forces that finally arose out of warlords were the nationalists and the communists. And they actually agreed on about 85 to 90% of everything anyway. That's why I say the outcomes would have been the same. And that's a case study. That's a case study. China. Very good, like post-apocalypse case study, because you had you basically had everyone on heroin for a few hundred years. And they were under like a foreign government. China was under different foreign governments, starting internally with like an internally foreign government of Manchurians, like since the 1600s and stuff. And then it was pretty much the decline. The mismanagement and corruption of that dynasty opened them up to the British just, basically getting everyone high on dope. And that's what happened for, another 100 years. So but the people who were like warlords, okay, even though we speak in terms of discursive and politics in terms of like the warlords were destroyed or replaced by these larger, more successful groups like nationalist or communist, okay. But in reality, they were composed of warlord groups that came together under something bigger. Okay. And you can see that parallel in the Walking Dead zombie universe with that that group that wears like all the white body armor and stuff. And I think they use like a British flag, so they have something There's something about that. They have some, you know, I don't follow the show enough to know, unfortunately. I mean, I know more than probably many people who've never seen it, but so people will be able to maybe help me with that and their story. But the specifics of the story are not as important, as they're very complex, and they're basically a continuation government of type. They're like a cog or something, a continuation of government and an emergency situation type thing. But it's not based like in America or the Constitution or something like that. Even though the people are, I guess, like Americans and British or something like this. So, you know, it's something where, in comparison to all the other human groups, that are like operating on this basis of basic sustenance, are pretty much all different crazy cults. These kind of different, like Manson family type groups, whatever, like, you know, everywhere. And some people even think that they're zombies too, and other people became cannibals, and, you know, whatever. So all these different human groups with different outcomes. Okay. So one of the big things then to consider is that, because there's so much libertarian thinking within survivalist networks, how do we take libertarian thinking about the responsibility of individuals and then the property rights that come from that, and then apply it to an extremely microeconomic scenario where coercion and reality are the same thing? That actually your ability to make everyone think that that stuff is already theirs is going to be the main thing that keeps them from seizing it. And I'm talking about your own friends. Like, I'm talking about your guys, like, to survive, to even start with. So we have to actually start to understand to what extent libertarian thinking, and I mean that in the vulgar sense. I'm not saying like what a libertarian intellectual has already figured out or not. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just saying the basic impulses of like, the ammo that I bought is mine. Or, hey, I prepared for this. Sorry that you didn't. I tried to tell you. I mean, yeah, so you did try to tell people and they didn't listen. But now what are you going to do? Are they all zombies? You see? So these are the things we got to figure out. Probably in terms of predictive programming and kind of deconstructing Hollywood writing and the New Age elements, and then dividing out which of those are actually Christological from the ones that are satanic and stuff like that, in an imperfect way that, you know, myself as an uninspired person will probably fail at doing, in all humility. But nevertheless, as a intellectual exercise, there may be secondary or tertiary things that we can pull out of it of high value. But I think in understanding, so we're not trying to find scriptural truth or religious truth, right? We're actually just trying to look at what are some of the motives of some of the writers in some of these series and things like that, and are they all bad? And that, can we actually even see, you know, motives aside, and maybe for reasons that aren't with their intentions, are we actually seeing some interesting like fruits being born from some of these series and stuff in popular culture? And to what extent, what things do we learn from the zombie phenomenon? What things do we learn about ourselves, how we see other people? Okay. What do the elites have in mind? How do they want us to see other people? How do we interact like in black pill milieu, where, you know, these people think that the elites are that everything that happens is just part of their plan, right? How do we interact with low information Christian fundamentalists? Okay, there are high information Christian fundamentalists. Any person with an interest in very good ideas could have a very long, endless conversation with any such person, for sure. Any number of truths about existence could be revealed, I'm positive, okay? But there are also low information people in all spheres of life. And because all includes Christian fundamentalists as a subcategory of all, there are low information Christian fundamentalists, and many of them love the keyboard. Somehow they figured out how computers work, or they got on they got their America Online stuff going. And that's all good, you know. But my take on the Bible is that it was written by the people who today are the Orthodox Christians, because that's the original, like, that's when it was, that was before the, like, the Frankish change of the church in Rome. So the origins of this, you know, I have are in, you know, Greek, the language of Christianity is Greek. And so I think that probably probably some in the Roman Catholic, like some of the ones looking at, because the Roman Catholic is very broad and they have different, you know, different organizations within it. So I know there's many very good, like, theologians and stuff that are, you know, obviously aren't the official view of the church, but they're still Catholic theologians. And, you know, there's many good stuff coming out of that too. But just in terms of, like, who wrote the Bible, you know, it was the, I guess you would call it the Orthodox Catholic Church or something like that, right? So, but what's kind of more important in the formation of Christianity is, like, how we understand who are, like, the church fathers, what did they say, church fathers and doctors, and kind of, like, what's that whole stuff about, and how did Christians wind up thinking about certain ways, and what became certain practices or beliefs in the church for those reasons, okay? All right, but as you know, right, I'm also not a person, I don't think that, like, everybody in India and China are going to hell or something like that. That's just not my understanding of how this stuff works. And I've never been convinced otherwise, no matter what. And I've looked for it, so I don't know. I've never found a theological justification that non-Christians aren't saved, actually. It's just how that works is it's not exactly stated, but I've never found it proved that it doesn't happen. So, and people might say, oh, but doesn't it say only by this? So yeah, yes, but you don't know when in life or in the afterlife those things occur, and through what form and language and all these other discursive things, because our language is all confused post-Babylon. So words and concepts that are Christological in nature would take on a different thing that would be alien to us because of the post-Babylon reality that we live in, where all the languages are confused. You see what I'm saying? With the Tower of Babel and the languages being confused. So I take a deep meaning from that in the concept of tongues, and getting the message out and what that means and how the tongues are incomprehensible to us. So for me personally, I also, and this is my view, I think that applies to the different names. It's what your intention and what your thought of what that God is. It's actually, you can't lie to God, and you can't miscommunicate to God, and God's incapable of misreading your intention. That's why for me, it doesn't matter like whether you pray through saints or pray, you know, because all prayers are to God if they're the right. You see, God knows what's right. God knows what you mean. And men like to kind of impose their ideas and their sense of the world onto these things. And I think that's driven by ego. That's my real belief. So, ergo, I think that inspiration and God works in mysterious ways, and inspiration pops up in interesting and weird times and places, especially when the forces of evil appear in their own kind of, you know, vain and always ultimately failing attempts to do. It's almost laughable. It's a joke. Evil is such a fucking weak force in the world, and it's such a joke when you expose it. It's so laughable, and the people involved are always invariably these pathetic, weak people. Like, it's so sad. You have almost nothing but empathy. You can't even be angry anymore. Your heart's just filled with love. You can't help but to just love these people, understand the place of weakness and sorrow they're operating from. You know, like, we got to pray for their souls and they stop harming everyone else. You know, but that doesn't. We don't end with the prayer, of course, but I'm just saying, when you originate, when it comes from that place, when your intentions towards them come from that place, you see, like, they think that your reactions and like calling them evil and all this stuff and like calling them powerful, like, see, that actually feeds into their delusion and gives them power. You know, when you start actually feeling sorry for them, you see, then it's when they start becoming like the object of, you know, pathos and things like this, like, then they start to be like very weakened, and they might even come to you. It might even come to Jesus. So, you know, I'm just saying, God works in mysterious ways in my personal experience, and miracles are a daily part of our existence. If you ask to see them, you will experience them. I promise you this. And likewise, in looking at what's happening in media and narratives and stories, because all of the power comes from us in the first place, and all the power, we always had it, okay? All of their attempts to maintain any semblance of legitimacy always have to come back tapping into like where the mindset of the moment is at. And in so doing, even in their own kind of, you know, vainglorious attempts to maintain the narrative and co-opt it, the water eventually breaks through that dam, and even through their own devices and their own attempts. And you have to be absolutely fucking retarded to think that goodness comes from being a transgender person, or that goodness comes from being black, or that goodness comes from being Mexican, or that goodness comes from being white, or that goodness comes from being Christian, or goodness comes from any of these identities that we have, any of these socially constructed, religious, theocratic, whatever. That's bullshit. All bullshit. Okay, God knows what's good, and God knows who you are. You can't hide from God. You're all naked before God. Every thought you have, every intention you have, is recorded forever in the universe. That's an objective fact because of the movement. We talked about the electromagnetic radiation coming out your head. Okay, that's coming in full thought form. It's not broken up or disambiguated. Okay, otherwise mirrors wouldn't work, TV wouldn't work, radio wouldn't work. You wouldn't hear me right now. Okay, yes, this is magic. This is a miracle. Okay, we just co-opted, we just layered this scientific mumbo jumbo explanations for this stuff that really make no sense. Over the supernatural phenomenon, like one of the most evident supernatural phenomenons in our existence, electromagnetic information, light, basically this existence, everything, light is supernatural. So, and it's actually the basis of what we call nature. So all physics based in, you know, this existence based in physics of light. So it's actually, you know, it's contradictory to say supernatural, but it's this is a created realm that you're in, right? ergo a creator. So then, okay, with all of that in mind, okay, who's a zombie? Is everybody a zombie? So I don't think that all the Hindus are zombies or Muslims are zombies. Or you see what I'm saying? I don't have some fantasy. I don't have, like, I'm going to be like the fucking Knights Crusade or some shit like that in a fucking jousting match with a Muslim or something. Like, what the fuck is this? No, I'm not trying to, like, save, you know, Western civilization or any other project of man. So zombie narratives, we have to reject. We have to reject every zombie narrative, and we work through it. Okay, we're not the zombies. Everyone's a zombie. All right. Oh, the elites are the zombies. Nobody's a zombie. All right. Peace. I'm out.